is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Great to be with you this lunchtime. Fires continue to burn around the top end towns of Katherine and Matarenka. We'll be getting the latest from Bushfires NT in a moment, and we'll also be speaking to the Weather Bureau at 1:05. Territory Mangoes have touched down in America this week. It is a long way from Katherine to Los Angeles. How are American consumers reacting to our Kensington prides? We'll be finding out soon. And a trip to Alice Springs today to check out the Territory's only wine vineyard.
We're thinking now that after the promotion, it'd be great to be able to supply some local restaurants with actual wine being made and produced in Alice Springs. So hopefully beyond 2021, we'll be able to supply some of the restaurants with a local variety of red wine.
Reds from the Red Centre. Sounds good to me. We'll also today be talking about feral pigs. What should be done about Australia's 24 million feral pigs? The National Farmers Federation is today calling on governments to get in and start culling them. What do you think should be done with the 24 million feral pigs roaming around the nation? Join the conversation. 0487 99 1057 is our text. Talking more about feral pigs in a moment. On the topic of pigs, the risk of African swine fever getting into Australia is very real. And as we've heard on the Country Hour, the disease has been spreading throughout Asia this year and has recently come as close as Timor-Leste. If there was to be an outbreak in this country, the impact on Australia's pork industry would be devastating. But the flow-on effects could also be felt by our cattle industry here in the Territory. To tell us more is Ashley Manikaros from the NT Cattlemen's Association. Ashley, in the last few weeks, you've been in several meetings to discuss African swine fever. Can you give us a sense of why the Cattlemen's Association is included in these talks?
Sure. So the issue with African swine fever is that it can't be passed on from, say, a pig to a bovine. That's not the issue. The issue comes in what happens if there is an outbreak. The problem for us in the cattle industry is what happens if there is an outbreak here and what are the restrictions that will be put onto the transport in particular of livestock, including cattle. So it is in our interest to be aware of what happens. The other aspect associated to it, Matt, is that there's a very large feral pig population that exists in the Northern Territory. They estimate the population to be between 500,000 and a million, which is just a small fraction of what the Australian estimation is of around 24 million. And these exist on pastoral properties. So there's a lot for us to take an interest in. And we think that we also have a network of pastoralists that can assist when it comes time to implement any type of response management plan.
On the potential transport implications, what have you been told about what might happen?
Well, this is an interesting question, because at the moment, both at local level, as in the Northern Territory government level, and also at national level, they're still working up response scenarios, because at this stage, they view the greatest vulnerability to be through the Brisbane-Sydney-Melbourne airport network.
Yep.
And I think that the response last week of Senator Bridget McKenzie, the Agriculture Minister, where they discovered 27 tonnes of pork products that had come through. And in fact, there was an Asian national who was sent back to her country when she'd come in with those pork products, is where they are focusing their attention. However, as recently as yesterday, the National Farmers Federation, and we support this call, had pursued the government on either a containment or an eradication program in regards to feral pigs. Nationwide.
I've got it here. Farmers call for a feral pig cull. Immediate action on the 24 million feral pigs.
Yeah, and we actually, I had a meeting with the office of the of Senator McKenzie last week, and that was one of three items that we put to them, is that we'd want to see it. There seems to be some interest in whether or not there's an ability to monetize that feral pig meat, which is what they used to do several years ago and send it away to Germany in the EU. However, I would say to you that probably with health guidelines being what they are, that it may not be able to achieve that, given that you are talking about a wild population of animals. Now, I've also had discussions with Pork Australia and Margot Andre, who, of course, used to be the Cattle Council chief executive. They, too, are right into this issue of feral pig containment. In the other aspects that we talked about, and they're assisting us with it through Pork Australia and through on-the-ground representation from some of our local senators and representatives, is in boosting the biosecurity presence here in the Northern Territory. At the moment, we've got the sniffer dog Suki in town, but we need more than that. And I think over a longer term, it is actually a very good road test for us to see how we respond to the biosecurity needs, given that we're always at risk of things like foot and mouth. So there's a lot happening on there, and we're in discussions of that, and full credit to the federal government.
Do you think it's realistic to try and, you know, cull the feral pig herd in Australia? Do you think it can be done?
No, look, I'll be honest with you, they struggle to do it in Europe, and I think what you would be doing is taking a large chunk of it out. So can I say to you, at the current climatic conditions, now may be the time to do it. So in other words, very dry, so we'll at least take a heap out of it. And I think that's probably the bigger key. If we lessen the numbers, we'll lessen the impact, should in the foreseen future that something happens on that ASF, then that's going to be one area that we're not going to have to be overly concerned about.
Yeah. Sorry to go back to the transportation.
That's right.
So there is a risk that, say, an outbreak gets declared tomorrow of African swine fever, and all of a sudden there's a call for no road trains to move any livestock from north to south. Like, that hasn't been agreed to yet, but that is something that potentially could happen that you're worried about.
Yeah, it could be overzealous to sort of look that far down the track, but there's some of the implications. Now, that doesn't mean the road trains will stop. What it means is that there will be restrictions on how they move.
Yeah, because cattle, as you say, can't contract African swine fever.
No.
But they're treading over ground that feral pigs with African swine fever, and if they've got mud on their hoofs, then it can travel that way.
Yeah, and adding to the complexity of that in terms of the movement is, Matt, you'd be aware of this, is that there's no substantial wash bay facility anywhere in the Northern Territory. And that's another area of infrastructure we've had a discussion. So there is at East Arm Port, and there are some smaller ones around the place. But in terms of our borders, there isn't a wash down facility. So we would think you need at least two, probably one in Alice Springs, definitely one in Katherine, and preferably one somewhere on the Barkley on that Queensland border. So we're going to work up a business case to be able to do that.
Wow. I'm surprised by that.
Well, I think many people would be.
I don't know the Queensland. I know in Western Australia they've got one there at Kununurra.
That's
right. NT cattle going west have to go through it.
That's exactly right. But what you don't have is you don't have one here in the Northern Territory. So you've got to literally drive to Kununurra to wash down your truck to do whatever. So, and in Central Australia, there isn't one at all. So we need that type of infrastructure. Now, we've done some costings, and it's about $2 million a bay to be able to do it. And primarily, that is to do with the water separation and the treatment, and then there's an ongoing cost of what you charge per litre. That all fits into part of the proactive insulation component of being able to deal with ASF. But to go back to where you were on the transport, it's the additional costs that will be associated and time delays associated to that livestock movement. And then, of course, our trading partners and what their reaction will be to the fact that ASF is around.
Yeah. With the cattle industry and the federal government, there's a plan sitting there on the shelf of what to do if foot and mouth disease pops up. Have you been given a time frame on when something will get sorted? On an African swine fever response plan?
Yeah, look, no, other than we've been reassured several times that they are more than advanced in terms of what they've got. But the problem is, though, you're talking multiple scenarios.
Yeah.
The scenarios change if it arrives at Sydney Airport or it arrives in a container in the Sydney ports or in Melbourne ports or Brisbane ports.
A bunch of feral pigs die in Arnhem Land.
Yeah, so there's different response mechanisms. I actually think that they are, to me, I'm not sure what the response mechanisms are in the north. I know the DPIR is. working on those. I haven't seen them yet, and I don't expect to see them for some time soon. I think at the moment what they're really trying to do is educate the travellers to say you need to be conscious of this. This is actually a very serious threat. And when you think about where ASF has moved through and the speed with which it's moved, it's a genuine threat to our agriculture sector.
And just before I let you go, Ashley Manikaros, the news this week that the Independent Observer Program has been changed to a risk-based approach, so basically meaning independent observers no longer required on the short-haul voyages and the live export trade. Do you see this as a good or a bad thing for the industry?
Look, I think it's... it adds to it. I think it's a good thing from our point, from a producer's point of view. We've got very good, very low mortality rates. We're only talking about a 5 or 6 day sail time out of Darwin into Indonesia. So we've well and truly within that short haul. And I think on figures from recollection out of the 174,000 cattle that had been transported, that there was like a death toll of around about 79. Whilst any is not acceptable, it's actually pretty good in terms of the scheme of the quantity. In terms of the independent observers, though, the benefit from our industry's point of view, it's just an overhead that gets removed, because I think that they are better off spending that overhead and resource on high-risk trade routes. And I don't believe that Darwin to Indonesia, given the length of that sailing time, is high risk.
Thanks for your time.
Good on you, Matt.
G'day, my name is Milika. I'm the local butcher in northeast Arnhem Land, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
Broadcasting across the territory on the ABC, and hello to those listening to our podcast. Now, yes, as was mentioned there with Ashley Manikaros, the National Farmers Federation is calling on all levels of government to coordinate a cull of Australia's 24 million feral pig population. It comes amid a growing feeling that feral pigs will be largely responsible for the spread of African swine fever if it ever gets into this country. Tony Ma, the chief executive of the Farmers Federation, says the time is right for a national cull.
Right now, at the moment, it's a good time to actually take these steps. We're obviously experiencing devastating drought, and the last thing we need is further difficulties and challenges from pests such as pigs. So it certainly seems like a good time at the moment for the government to initiate such an initiative, and notwithstanding the drought, but also, you know, possibly linked to the African swine fever risk that we know is on our doorstep.
So have you got specifics of what you want, how much funding you want to be put toward this, what sort of resources, what control methods could be used?
Look, we haven't gone into that level of detail. We've just been talking about it at our NFF Members' Council last week, and it had unanimous support for us to talk with government, and we have been talking with them around a range of measures, obviously relating to the drought. And it became apparent that this could be another area where the government could assist the industry and take some steps, particularly at the moment, around controlling feral pests such as pigs.
Do you think the feral pig problem has flown under the radar or crept up on the government, and now we're at a point where there's 24 million feral pigs out there and it might be difficult to wind that back?
Well, I think it's been an ongoing issue, and I think right now, just at the moment, it's being exacerbated because of the conditions that a large part of the country is facing in terms of drought. So, you know, the appears like it's a good time to actually do this sort of thing. Now, we could debate about whether it's gotten out of control, but right now it's looking for measures that will make a difference. And if we could get some sort of process in place or project in place where the government worked with local communities, state governments, whoever it might be, to actually help control this pig problem.
How difficult do you think it would actually be to have a meaningful impact on feral pig numbers?
Oh, look, I think not underestimating the challenge. I mean, it's going to take a pretty significant impact, and that's where, again, I think we probably need cooperation across Commonwealth and state, and possibly, you know, local governments as well. So, but if we continue to let it go, you know, it's not going to get any better.
Have you had a response from governments yet? And if you haven't, what response do you expect?
Well, we haven't. No, it's, it was only last Wednesday when all of the NFF members came to have this discussion and endorsed it. So we've put it forward to government. We'll continue to talk with them about it. But I know that they are looking at measures that will help rural and regional communities and farm businesses specifically. So I hope it's a positive response. Minister McKenzie has clearly highlighted the risks around biosecurity and, as I say, the potential impacts of African swine fever right on our doorstep. So, you know, there's a couple of parallels there. So I know it's biosecurity is one of her priorities. So I'm looking forward to having that discussion with them, and hopefully it'll be a favourable response.
Now, just on African swine fever, I think in recent weeks, 48% of pork products detected at our borders were actually infected with ASF. So given that, do you think it is possible to keep it out of the country?
We hope so. We're, you know, we're wanting to make sure that we do everything possible to prevent it. And that's why, again, we've been making sure that we work in cooperation with both the Agriculture Minister and the government around what measures we need to take. So additional resources and technology and tools that try and prevent it from coming to Australia. It is the foundation, the underpinning of the entire agriculture sector, a strong biosecurity regime. So we're doing everything that we possibly can. And I know the Minister is acutely aware of it and has taken some steps, but it'll be an ongoing challenge to make sure that we don't get that disease here in Australia.
That's Tony Maher. He's the Chief Executive of the National Farmers Federation, speaking to Angus Verley, the NFF, calling on all governments to coordinate a cull of Australia's feral pig population. There's 24 million of them out there. The Federal Ag Minister, Bridget McKenzie, has been contacted for comment. On our Facebook page this afternoon, this is the ABC Rural Facebook page, we've asked the question, what should be done about Australia's 24 million feral pigs? It's okay to say go and control them, but how? How do you go about doing that? This post has had more than 200 comments in the last hour. Dan Fitzgerald, what are some of the people out there saying?
Plenty of people are advocating for more hunting, Matt. That's a pretty common thread throughout the comments. Scott, he says, yeah, allowing hunting or shooting on Crown land if you have the appropriate licence. He says, I have my licence, but the hardest part is finding the land that the owner will allow hunting on. And Nick, he says, they're a very difficult animal to shoot out of an area. Trapping was the most effective on our place here in southwest Victoria. Chris, he just says, eat them. Not sure about that one. Darren says, put a bounty on them and make it worthwhile to chase them. And Mark writes, find a biological agent like a virus that kills them and make sure it doesn't harm any other species and release it.
A swathe of ideas there. I wonder what the price point would be on a bounty that would prick people's attention and make them want to go out there and start getting pigs. I wonder how many dollars per head would be the number to entice people to get out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of people commenting that they're happy to do it for nothing on that Facebook yeah. page, but a bounty could be an idea.
Ashley Manikaros mentioned years ago there was a market to send dead feral pigs into Europe. I remember that time because I know on our own farm we were knocking over big pigs, and all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't big money, but I think we were getting 50, 60 bucks, you know, better than a dead pig in a paddock. So I was too young to remember sort of exactly what was happening in the market situation at the time, but it was money in the hand and it was pretty good.
Yeah, that does $50, $60. That's a reasonable amount.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you take that. Anyway, all right, you can join this conversation yourself via the ABC Rural Facebook page or send us a text 0487 991057. What do you think should be done with Australia's feral pig population, currently standing at about 24 million head?
Hello, my name's Stephen Rose and I have a nursery just north of Catherine, and I love to listen to the Country Hour.
It is 10 to 1 o'clock. So much going on, isn't there? let's turn our attention back to our earlier conversation about the change to the Independent Observer program. If you missed the Country Hour yesterday, we were speaking to the Australian Livestock Exporters Council about this change. Essentially, the government is moving to a risk-based approach, which will basically mean that independent observers will no longer be required on most of the short-haul voyages between Northern Australia and Southeast Asia. The RSPCA, it has criticised this decision, saying it should have been consulted over changes to this policy. Its senior policy officer, Jed Goodfellow, says the move is a backward step for animal welfare.
Yeah, look, the RSPCA is concerned about this latest development. The Observer Program was established in order to provide independent validation of on-board conditions and also to provide further assurances to the community about those conditions. So to see that only 18 or so months later we're seeing a fairly significant watering down of that program is quite concerning. So we think the decision is premature. We believe that first there should have been consultation on this development so that other stakeholders can provide their input, but it seems that the government's making this decision first and doing consultation later.
So cattle exporters obviously have welcomed this move, saying what it does is reward good performance in regards to animal welfare. Isn't that a fair point? Shouldn't they be freed of the significant cost burden of inspectors if they can consistently prove they're doing the right thing?
Look, there are still concerns in the live cattle trade. We do acknowledge that the risks of sending sheep to the Middle East going over the equator and sending southern breeds of cattle over the equator do present greater risks for animal welfare than northern breeds of cattle going up into Southeast Asia. Nevertheless, the northern cattle live cattle trade is not without risk and it's not without its problems. So the whole point of this observer program was to provide that independent validation of onboard conditions, and there is still a need for that to occur. So we're willing to work with the Australian government in terms of looking at alternative models for providing that independent validation. But it is concerning that the government's already made the decision to pull those observers off those vessels prior to engaging in that consultation. So it does seem to be a familiar policy cycle where we see after an expose of a horrible animal welfare incident, there's many commitments and promises made by the government, and then once the public scrutiny subsides, we do see a process of watering down regulations and going back on commitments that have been made, and this seems to be another example of that.
Are you concerned this scaling back may lead eventually to a complete abolishment of independent observers on all ships?
We would certainly hope that is not going to be the case. If the government was to signal any kind of move away from the observer program in its entirety, then not only the RSPCA, but I would imagine a significant proportion of the Australian community would be making their concerns known to the government. Now is not the time to be backtracking on animal welfare commitments. If anything, we need to be very vigilant and strong in relation to this government regulation around the live export trade, because the live export trade still does not enjoy widespread community support and trust due to a history of major disasters and a history of neglecting animal welfare. So if the industry does want to have a sustainable future, then it's got to be embracing reforms of this nature. So to see the government going back on those previous promises is very concerning.
You mentioned the RSPCA is looking at alternate models and working with the government on that. Where are you up to with that, and what are the sort of standouts there for you at the moment?
Well, one of the options could be technological mechanisms for providing that independent validation, such as the installation of CCTV on board the vessels. That could be a source of monitoring that the government may be able to look into, and the RSPCA has made its views on that technology known to the Australian government. But alternatively, I mean, we could also be looking at different approaches to the appointment of the veterinarians and the Australian government accredited stock people on board the vessels as well. So to provide, again, that level of independence from the exporter. So we're certainly open to looking at different models of achieving the same purpose, but we certainly would have preferred to have engaged in this consultation first prior to having the government make a pretty significant decision.
That's Jed Goodfellow from the RSPCA speaking to Carmen Brown. Changes to the Independent Observer program. You can read more about it right now if you go searching for NT Country Hour.
A bushfire survival plan is one of the best ways to ensure the safety of you and your family. It will stop you making potentially dangerous last-minute decisions and help you decide what to do before, during, and after a fire. Go to abc.net.au/emergency to develop your bushfire survival plan and discuss the plan with your entire family. ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory, your emergency broadcaster.
Okay, we've got fires burning around the town of Mataranka and to the north of Katherine this afternoon. The fire near the Stewart Estate outside of Katherine has actually just been upgraded to a watch and act. To tell us more about it, we're joined by Josh Fisher from Bushfires NT. Tell us about this fire in the Stewart Estate, Josh. What's happening out there?
Good afternoon. So Bushfires NT have upgraded the messaging back to a watch and act. That fire is continuing to spread in a northwesterly direction in the areas of Beasley Road and Gundagai Road. We've got multiple spot overs occurring where there's two flanks of fire that are moving out along Gundagai Road. That's moving through hay paddocks and is spotting up to 500 metres. And then south of Beasley's Road, we've got fire there also spotting about 500 metres ahead of the fire front. So a very challenging time for Bushfires NT volunteers and landholders out there working to contain the fire.
Are there any homes under threat?
At this point in time, yes, there is a number of homes along Beasley Road there that have already been surrounded by fire, and further homes that could be impacted with the spotting that is occurring at this time.
So what's your advice to people living in this area?
People in this area need to enact their bushfire survival plan. There's lots of landowners out there that are working with Bushfires NT volunteers and staff. They're linking in with the plan that's in place. There's lots of backburning attempting to be done, but due to the conditions, it's a very challenging time. So we just ask that landowners work in with each other and work in with Bushfires NT volunteers and staff that are out there just to ensure that we're all on the same page and working to the same goal about trying to stop this fire.
And sounds like a bit of hay has been lost. Is that right?
It's burning through hay paddocks that have been previously baled.
Okay.
It's just standing grass that's left. Obviously, once it gets out into the open, though, with the shorter grass, it can move very, very quickly. So that's what's proving difficult for the crews on the ground.
Josh, we've got 2 minutes before the 1 o'clock news bulletin. What can you tell us about the fire around Mataranka?
There's a little bit of good news there around Mataranka. Northern Territory Fire and Rescue Service volunteers and Parks and Wildlife Rangers worked through the evening to establish some control lines around that. There's still lots of internal burning that's happening, particularly in the creek corridors. But at this time, there's no new spread of fire. It's all burning within those containment lines. So some fantastic work there by Parks and Wildlife and the Northern Territory Fire and Rescue Service volunteers.
It sounds like it got pretty scary there yesterday. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, look, it burnt right around the Mataranka Township. So come right up close, there was lots of work done to protect homes and property. So it would have been a very tough time for everyone on the ground.
You're dealing with near record temperatures out there. Is your focus pretty much on those fires around Katherine or Mataranka, or are resources getting stretched elsewhere?
Look, in the Savannah region, Bushfires NT resources are fully committed to the farm north of Stewart Estate. Parks and Wildlife and NTFRS are dealing with the fire at Mataranka with Parks and Wildlife and landowners dealing with other fires right across the Savannah. Up in the top end, Bushfires NT are assisting with fires at the Cashew Farm there in the Point Stewart region and on Welltree LaBelle Station west of Litchfield National Park. So Bushfires NT resources are fully committed across the top end, working with landowners and volunteers to support these fire incidents.
Thank you for all the work you do, and thanks for keeping us up to date.
Not a worry, and look, a big shout out to our volunteers, that this is, particularly here in Katherine, this is, you know, since Saturday this has been burning. These are long days and very difficult fire conditions and very tough times for all involved.
Thank you. That's Josh Fisher from Bushfires NT. That fire at Katherine, there'll be updates throughout the afternoon, I am sure, on ABC, your emergency broadcaster. We've still got heaps to come on the Country Hour, including a look at some mangoes that have gone all the way from Katherine to America. But now it is news time, 1 o'clock.
Hello, my name is Tu from Tu's Garden. My farm is in Acacia Hills, and we are gearing up for the fabulous mango seasons, and you listen to Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. Some fabulous NT mangoes have landed in America this week. We'll be speaking to the company behind that consignment in a moment. And we've been talking about feral pigs on the Country Hour today. It's estimated there's around 24 million of them in Australia. The National Farmers Federation is calling for a cull. What can be done to reduce feral pig numbers in this nation? Big discussion via Facebook. If you go searching for ABC Rural, Tony reckons cull and export them benefits the environment, jobs and the Australian economy. Greg says open up more public land to hunting. Tony says just love them. Every one of God's creatures deserves to live in peace, says Tony on Facebook. Stephen says, I see the government scare tactics are well at it. Pretty much the same thing they did to try and wipe out the buffalo. And Rodney says, why not make use of the Australian Defence Force? Holy smokes. You can join the conversation on Facebook or send us a text 0487 99 1057. Got a message here from Steve in Katherine who says, the Germans love wild boars. The bigger and smellier they are, the more we used to get. My granddad saved his farm by trapping pigs and sending them to KR Darling Downs. He trapped over 3,000 of them, says Steve on 0487 99 1057. My memories were there was money to be made in the early to mid-90s to send feral pigs, like dead ones, over, yeah, to Europe, to Germany. There was a bit of money. I'm not too sure what happened to that market. Sure, something happened. I'm sure the Country Hour was covering it back in 1995 or whatever it was. Maybe we might have someone listening who knows what happened to the German market. 0487 99 1057, our text at the Country Hour. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Billy Lynch is there this afternoon. Billy, there's a nasty fire to the north of Katherine this afternoon in the Stewart Estate. What are conditions like out there for those battling the blaze?
Yeah, good afternoon. Look, not ideal. It's very hot and dry out there, so temperature's sitting about 37. The humidity's down around 10%, and the wind has picked up just in the last few hours. So we're seeing the occasional wind gusts to get up to around 50 kilometres per hour or so. So that wouldn't be good conditions.
50 kilometres an hour, the wind.
Yeah, the wind gust. Yeah.
Wow. Those conditions, how long are you expecting them to last?
Well, for a few more hours, in terms of today, for a few more hours, they'll gradually ease off from the middle part of the afternoon. And then the good news is winds are at their peak. So from tomorrow, we're expecting some lighter winds. We're actually not anticipating any fire weather warnings for the territory tomorrow.
Really?
So okay. That is good news, but it's still going to be very hot and dry out there, so the fire dangers, they'll still be very high, but not pushing into the severe ranges. But yeah, still not going to be ideal for another day or so.
This current heat wave, end in sight, where is it?
It's probably, I think we've seen the peak. We're not forecasting any more records. So I think we've seen the worst of it. And then over the next few days, gradually we're going to see a little bit more cloud cover with a little bit more humidity. So that's going to take the edge off these really extreme daytime temperatures. And we're also expecting isolated showers and storms to return to parts of the top end towards the end of this week.
Well, that's good news. Much rain in that or just a sprinkle?
Well, the usual build-up storm. So, look, if you're lucky, you know, there'll be a decent drop, but it's not going to be widespread. So there will be a bit of luck involved as well.
In terms of temperatures this afternoon, what are some of the real hot spots in the territory?
Yeah, look, it is the Daly District. So Douglas Rivers hit 41 degrees already today. That's the hottest place that we've got recorded in the territory at the moment. But look, out in Darwin's rural area, it's sitting around 38, 39 degrees. Catherine around 37. And even further south, so Largemanu's 38, Tennant Creek's 35. So some pretty warm temperatures out there still, and it's probably going to be that cloud cover which is going to help cool things off, because it's not just the top end, Matt. From tomorrow, we're expecting a trough with some humidity to push into the Barkly District.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be the isolated shower and even thunderstorm across the Barkly tomorrow. We can actually see some showers on the Mount Isa radar over Queensland side at the moment. So that's kind of some good news.
Yeah, any drop will be welcome.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's only going to build throughout the week. So there'll be another trough from Western Australia push into the southern districts on Thursday as well. So that will also help kick off some thunderstorms.
Anything else we need to know before I let you go?
Just that there is a fire weather warning and fire ban today for the Darwin and Adelaide River area and also the Gregory District.
Yep. Beauty. All right, thank you for that, Billy. Have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you, you too.
That is Billy Lynch there at the Weather Bureau. And just repeating, there is a watch and act in place this afternoon for a fire that's burning in the Stewart Estate. This is to the north of Katherine. Plenty of fire, plenty of smoke. If you're in that region, please slow down, drive to the conditions, and be aware that there are firefighting crews working flat out in that area to protect property, to protect homes. When we spoke to Josh Fisher before 1 o'clock, he said there were some homes under threat. There'll be updates throughout the afternoon on ABC Radio.
34 years ago, Uluru's traditional owners received
inalienable freehold title.
And now the traditional owners have decided to close the climb. A lot of debate has happened, and a lot of people have travelled to Uluru to climb the rock for the last time. It's a very big deal, which is why we're bringing you a very special Uluru broadcast from 10 a.m. Friday on ABC Radio.
It is 12 past one here on the Country Hour. We've been talking about feral pigs. The National Farmers Federation calling on governments to get stuck in and start culling feral pigs in Australia. An estimated herd of 24 million of them roaming around the nation. How do you go about doing that? Ash says simple. Bacon, bacon, bacon. Mitch reckons $5 a tail should act as a bit of an incentive. We've got Ian from Anula on the phone who can remember a time, Ian, when pigs from the NT were getting sent to Germany. Fair dinkum. Tell us about that. You're there, Ian. No, we've lost Ian. We might try and get him back. Feral pigs from the territory getting sent to Germany. I wonder if that was in the early to mid-90s like we were talking about earlier on. 13 past one. Let's move away from pigs and talk about mangoes. Catherine to Los Angeles. It's a long way, isn't it? That is a long way, but that is where some territory mangoes have landed this week. The American market, it's been building slowly in recent years for the mango industry, and one company that's been getting involved with this export market is Manbalu Mangoes. Carl Geiger is Manbalu's logistics manager. Carl, can you tell us a bit about these mangoes that have landed in America this week?
Oh, it's very exciting. We're actually we're up to consignment number two now, which is fantastic. They were sent over in order to meet a PMA event in Los Angeles, which saw 25,000 people from across the American agricultural industry looking at potential products to share with the American consumers. So we were very excited that we could put Northern Territory mangoes in front of those people and get them looking at it as a potential consumer product in the States.
What's been the feedback from those over there that have seen them and tasted them?
Oh, it's been amazing, actually. just the flavour is such a new thing for them. Most of the varieties that they see are sort of South American varieties. So we've sent over the Kensington Pride variety, or the KP, and just the flavour profile alone, people are just going absolutely crazy for. They love the sweet flavour. They love that strong mango-y smell, which is sort of, I suppose, normal for all of us over here in the Northern Territory. But for them, it's a fantastic new experience.
Roughly, what is an American consumer paying for an Australian mango over there?
Oh, roughly, it's about $7 US at the moment for an Australian mango.
And that works out well for you at Mambaloo? That's a good price point?
Look, there's a lot of challenges in doing export. So export is a very complicated process to get that product all the way over. There is so many steps along the way in order to make sure our product gets there on time and in the highest possible quality, that obviously an export market needs to pay a little bit more in order to cover all those costs. So it is good. It's good for us, but it's not, I wouldn't say it was extraordinary sort of profit or anything like that. It's just a fantastic opportunity to expand our market.
When the American market opened up a few years back, it was hailed as a huge opportunity. How do you think it is tracking?
Oh, I think no doubt at all that there's a consumer base over there that will love our mango. It's only very early days still, though. So we need to get out there and educate consumers and get people really driving demand. Equally, it's a very complicated process to get it to the United States. There's a great deal of steps that you have to go through to get there. And we've sort of been running the pilot program, and we're now into commercialization. And that has taught us a lot of lessons in the supply chain. And there's been a lot of learnings across the supply chain that you very much need to be paying attention to your product, and you need to tick a lot of boxes and fill out a lot of paperwork as well to make sure you get there. So I think the potential is certainly there for it to be a great market, definitely. There's a great consumer there, but it's not an easy task to get to the States.
Is there anything the Northern Territory government can do to make your life easier?
Oh, look, I think the Northern Territory government, particularly DPI and those people have been helping us out across the course of our whole business, not just in this area, but across the course of our whole business. Really challenging things that happen in the Northern Territory, which I know that the government is working on. It's very difficult to, freight is a very difficult challenge for all of industries across the Northern Territory. And getting providers and service providers that really will go that extra mile and commit to the professionalism that's required can be very challenging, particularly due to our remoteness and the nature of the workforce within the territory. And I'm not sure how much the government can react in that space, but those things are real challenges for our business.
And in general, how is the mango season looking for Mambaloo at the moment?
Yeah, the mango season is going really well at the moment. It's been a very tough year in terms of weather. It's been extremely hot very early. Not that we're not used to hot weather up here, but it seems to have got hotter faster.
Well, yeah, you're almost dealing with record heat down there in Katherine.
That's correct, yeah. So that's been very tough on the trees, on the fruit, and on the staff, obviously. But overall, it's going very well. We're happy with how things are travelling at this stage.
Thanks for your time on the country out today.
All right, no worries. Thank you for having me.
Carl Geiger, he's from Mambaloo Mangoes, that company, putting mangoes into America this week from Katherine to Los Angeles. Mambaloo also exports to South Korea, China, Japan, even Canada. They are becoming a big exporter of territory, of Australian mangoes. It is 19 past one. We've got Ian from Anula back on the line. Ian, what can you tell us about feral pigs from the territory getting sent to Germany?
Yeah, East Germany, Matt. Well, back in the old days there, some of the people down in the rural area used to have what we used to call boxes of refrigerated, like 20-foot containers. And you'd go out and you'd hunt pigs and you'd leave the liver and the kidney in them and you'd take them back there and they'd weigh them and you'd get paid for them and they'd put them in those freezers and they'd get collected from there to go over to East Germany. Same as a buffalo when out at Budgenbury when they and Point Stewart. They had German meat inspectors there when they were slaughtering the buffalo and they used to send the meat over there as well.
Can you remember how much people were getting paid per pig?
Oh,
roughly?
No. It varied by weight, Matt, yeah.
And so what happened to this trade?
Well, I think maybe when the wall came down, it all stopped. I don't know, really. Yeah, but it was a big thing there back a while ago. But, yeah, I think it was something to do with the wall coming down, as far as I know.
Yeah, right. So, well, 89.
Yeah, because it used to go, the meat was going to East Germany.
Into the, into the Soviet side?
Yeah.
Hmm, rightio.
As far as I was aware, that's what I heard anyway, yeah.
Have you tucked into a bit of territory feral pig?
Yeah, mate, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think?
It's all right. What I used to do when I worked for Townsend, there we used to just get, if we caught little ones, we'd cut them and let them go. And later on, when they got a bit fatter and that, you shot them. Either that or you got them young, you put them in a pen and fed them on cracked corn for a while, a couple of weeks, and then you ate them then. They were clean as, mate. They're good.
Beautiful. Thanks for getting in touch, Ian. Love it.
No worries, buddy.
Ian from Anula sharing his story there. 1300 057 222 is our number at the Country Hour.
G'day, I'm James Campbell. I look after the company that's put the first retail chilled beef online in China. You're listening to the Northern Territory Country Hour. Keep it rural.
And we're always learning, aren't we? It is 21 past one. How would you feel about coming home at the end of the day and maybe having a slice of NT pork accompanied by a Territory Shiraz or maybe a Red Centre Cab Sav? As strange as that might sound, there is a little vineyard in Alice Springs that's hoping to make this a possibility. Nestled behind a commercial radio station on the Stuart Highway, the vines have just started to burst with life in the last couple of weeks. Roger Harris, the general manager of Alice Springs Commercial Broadcasters, explained these vines and this project to Jack Price.
Well, it all started, probably the first suggestion was not mine, it came from my father about 25 years ago. He comes from a wine growing area and he thought, well, we've got all this land out here, why don't we plant a vineyard? But back then I had no idea what to do, so it never got off the ground until recently. My son-in-law is an actual winemaker, so we thought, well, this might be a good time to plant a vineyard with the thought of having a promotion for our 50th birthday for 8HO, which comes up in 2021. So we thought, well, what a great promotion if we could grow our own wine, make our own wine and give it away to our clients as a promotional gift for our 50th birthday. So off we went. But it's really taken off great. So we're thinking it'll probably go beyond the 50th promotion now.
Yeah, it's pretty green out there at the moment. I pulled off the side of the road when I noticed, you know, how much green there was on the vines. How are things going from a viticulture perspective? Are you seeing what you want to be seeing at this point in time?
Well, yeah, we actually had a very good strike rate. We've lost a few, but we're actually doing better than we expected to be at this stage, which is just over 12 months. So for 12 months vineyard, it's looking more like a two-year vineyard. So we're very happy with the progress of it.
How far away are you from potentially being able to pick and turn some grapes into wine?
Well, we're hoping, as I mentioned, our 50th anniversary for 8HO is in 2021. We're hoping to have our first vintage bottled up by then. So we're having a look. We're good. If you have a look, there's quite a few bunches on there already. So we're hopeful that, yeah, by 2021 we'll have our first vintage out.
What sort of labour is involved in the upkeep of the vineyard?
Very little at the moment. We had a bit of establishment set up, which took a bit. But now we probably get them pruned twice a year. And our maintenance man probably spends maybe an hour a week pulling out weeds. Apart from that, it's all an automatic watering system and chuck a bit of fertiliser on and that's it. We're good to go.
And what varieties are you going for at the moment?
Well, the Shiraz is going really well. Cabernet Sauvignon is looking good. When we've got a couple of blend varieties, Mataro and Grenache. So we've got four varieties out there, two main ones and two for blending.
Do you have any sense of how many bottles of wine you might be able to produce?
Well, according to our expert, we should be getting it, and of course it'll depend on the yield, but we're looking at least $2,000 bottles a year.
Wow, so that's quite a few. Would you potentially be able to use the wine for a bit more than just promotional purposes?
Well, yeah, we're thinking now that after the promotion, it'd be great to be able to supply some local restaurants with actual wine being made and produced in Alice Springs. So hopefully beyond 2021, we'll be able to supply some of the restaurants with a local variety of red wine.
Yeah, and as far as I know, this is probably the only vineyard in the territory. That could be a bit of a claim to fame, I imagine.
Well, yeah, there are plenty of wine of table grape vineyards, and Richie Hayes, who's got one of the bigger ones, is helping us out quite substantially at the moment. He's suggesting he's donated us some fertiliser and suggesting about how we could go about it. So much appreciated to Richie. And yeah, no, but as far as we know, yes, it's the only wine grapes growing in the territory.
Yeah, sorry, I should have clarified that. Definitely a few other vineyards around the territory. But that could also be potentially used as a bit of a marketing tool if you wanted to sell the wine elsewhere, I imagine.
Well, we haven't thought beyond what we've got. It's only very small. It's only less than an acre. So we haven't really thought about further potential other than the promotion and maybe a little bit of local.
Not going to export just yet?
No, we're not looking at the export market just yet.
A cellar door, perhaps?
That has been suggested, but... Well, that's something we'll have to think about later on too. I think we haven't really gone into cellar door selling at the moment.
I might be getting a little bit too excited about this vineyard. I really like the idea.
Well, a lot of people are excited about it. You know, we've had people just dropping in off the street and saying, "Well, this is great. What are you doing here?" So it's definitely piqued some interest in around the town. That's for sure.
Yeah. And so, what time of year would you be picking the grapes, and would they be sent down south for the wine to be produced?
Well, yeah, initially we'd probably pick and crush them here, send them down in barrels down to South Australia and get the winemaker to produce the first batch anyway. We're thinking beyond that we might be able to get our own established vineyard up here and actually do the whole production in Alice Springs.
That's Roger Harris, the General Manager of Alice Springs Commercial Broadcasters. He and the team are hoping to produce about 2,000 bottles of red wine from that little vineyard there in the Alice. Jack Price with that report. Reds from the Red Centre. That does sound good. It's time now in the Country Hour to head to the sale yards. Well, the latest prices from the Roma store sale. Here's Cheryl Stefano.
Good afternoon. Cattle numbers rose by 1,892 to 5,490 head at the Roma store sale. Cattle were drawn from a wide supply area and a good panel of buyers was present and operating. Several larger single vendor lines were yarded and steers were still selling at the time of this interim report. Prices mostly continued to improve from the previous week with variations reflective of quality. Lightweight yearling steers under 280 kilos to restockers fell by 12. Medium weight yearling steers under 330 kilos to feed rose by 13. Medium weight yearling steers under 400 kilos to feed rose by 11. Heavyweight yearling steers over 400 kilos to feed rose by 2. The largest sample of lightweight yearling steers under 280 kilos to restockers sold to 296.2 to average 282. Medium weight yearling steers under 330 kilos to background or feed sold to 306.2 to average 286. Medium weight yearling steers under 400 kilos to feed sold to 312.2 to average 301. Heavyweight yearling steers to feed sold to 304.2 to average 296. This has been Cheryl Stavano for the National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thanks for that, Cheryl. In the live export trade, feeder steers out of Darwin, bound for Indonesia, still fetching around $3.15 a kilo. I wonder when that price might go up a little bit. Another message on pigs. Someone here says there used to be a bounty on pig snouts. Fellow in North Queensland had a license to sell pig meat to Germany government, but they suspended the license. In the 70s, pastoral companies had ticks to look after stock welfare, says someone on the text. Thank you for that. Huge conversation underway on the ABC Rural Facebook page if you want to get amongst that feral pig conversation. Michaela Simpson, after three, quickly, what can we expect?
We're going to go through the Territorians who have been nominated for the National Live Music Awards.
Live Music Award?
Yes.
And there's Australian of the Year's awards.
We're not touching that today, Matt.
Oh, there's gongs going everywhere. All right, that's after three with Michaela. Have a good one. Keep it rural.